creepy. And I was excited because there are very few Ruths around anymore. Actually, for your information, our name Ruth ranked third in popularity, but that was in 1897. Third. And in case you're wondering, that was because it marked the birth of President Grover Cleveland and Frances Folsom Cleveland. Their first child in the White House was a baby they named Ruth. And so after that, there were many. But even a candy bar was named after her, Baby Ruth Candy Bar. Yeah, that was not Babe Ruth the baseball player. That was after that baby. So somehow our ranking in popularity has slipped since those days. We now rank 537th. Yes. I didn't know there were that many names, but we are waiting for our comeback. Ruth is one of the few names. There are some others, like Frank and Ernest, but certainly one of the few female names to also be a noun. The name in Hebrew means beautiful, compassionate friend. And one who has Ruth is big-hearted and kind and charitable. But as it happens, we are far more likely to hear someone described as being without those traits, and we say that person is ruthless. Yeah, I love that sound. Thank you. Yes, it's ruthless, but we don't talk about people as being Ruth. Oh, well. So before I start, I'll give you just a little background of my name and my feelings about it. Most often people would say, I have a grandmother named Ruth. Yeah, I believe that. So when I was in high school, I did not like my name because I wanted a cheerleader's name. I wanted a name that sounded peppy, like Jody or Carrie, something with a little spring and bounce. So I decided I would change my name, and I did it by going to my middle name, which was Gilmore, my grandmother's maiden name. I lopped off the Gil, the G-I-L, which means servant. So Gilchrist, servant of Christ. Gil Martin, servant of Martin. Gilmore, servant of Mary. So I said, okay, off goes the Gil. I'll keep M-O-R, and I'll stick an I at the end. M-O-R-I, that's my new name, is Maury. Well, I was no fool in that I knew I could not start being Maury while I was still in high school. If people know you by one name, forget it. So I waited until the first day of college, got to registration, and my father, who was standing right beside me, said, tell them your name. And I repeated, I said, my name is Maury. Well, believe it or not, I went by Maury for 10 years. All my professors knew me as Maury. If you would have asked senior year, what's her name? They would have no idea it was Ruth. That name was gone. And I kept it until I was appointed to my first churches. I thought, here it's rural Minnesota, South Dakota border. They've never had a woman pastor. They don't want a woman pastor. And if I go in as Pastor Maury, I'm better off Pastor Ruth. So I changed over. And age has a way of making us more mellow, a little wiser. And I have come over time to love the name Ruth. So that is why I'm preaching this sermon. When Benjamin Franklin was the United States ambassador to France, he occasionally attended a club, which spent its time looking for literary masterpieces and then reading them out loud. And on one occasion, Benjamin Franklin read to this group the Book of Ruth, but he changed the names so it positively would not be recognizable. And when he finished, they were unanimous in their praise. They said it was one of the most beautiful short stories they had ever heard and insisted on hearing from him where he had found such a remarkable tour de force. Well, it was his great delight to tell them that it was right in the Bible. This, then, is my own rendition of this priceless book. My name is Ruth. And even though I have been credited as being a steadfast and biblical saint, I need to say that it was Naomi, my mother-in-law, who brought out the best in me. It was Naomi, who is the saint in my book. Naomi was the most selfless person I have ever met. This is not to say that she wasn't stubborn. I can't imagine anyone more so, actually, when I think about it. Nor is it to say that her theology was very sound, at least not to my mind, because as it happened, Naomi accepted every hardship, each tragedy in her life, as direct punishment from God. And I, on the other hand, always imagined God as plotting our joy. So we had two very different ways of looking at life. Yet, be that as it may, I cannot think of anyone else in my life who loved God more than she did. And if God is love, which I believe to be the case, then she is the one I credit as showing me what God looked like. Oh, how she loved me. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Naomi was born and raised in Bethlehem. And it was there that she met and married the man in her life, Elimelech. They had two sons, and for a number of years, the four of them lived very good, healthy, and prosperous lives. But then came a famine. Their crops failed, and so they were forced to move to greener pastures. And they went east to what today is called Jordan. But back then, it was known as Moab. And Moab is where I am from. Moab is where I was born. Well, the move felt like a curse to Naomi because Israel and Moab were established enemies. And most of my people, admittedly, worshipped idols. But for me, that move was a blessing because had they not come to Moab, I would never have met and married Naomi's son. And he was, to me, one of God's finest noblemen. Naomi spent 10 years in my country, but admittedly, they were years rife with suffering. Even though she gained not one, but two daughter-in-laws, myself and Orpah. Still, over the course of that decade, all three of the men in her life died. By the way, Oprah Winfrey was named after Orpah. There was just a difference in spelling, and that's why it's O-P-R-A-H instead of O-R. Just a mistake. So, at any rate, that decade, three of the men, her husband, both her sons, died. And so it wasn't surprising to me when she told us that she was deciding to go back home. She wanted to go back to Bethlehem. But I think the reason she wanted to move, even more for herself, was for us, was for Orpah and for me. Because she thought that if she stayed, then Orpah and I would stay committed to her. And she didn't want that. And she would say to us repeatedly, "Don't waste your time on me. Go home to your own mothers. And then start over. You're young." She wanted us to meet other men. She wanted us to have their children. She wanted us to be as happy in our lives as she once was in hers. So, one day, in order to help make that wish a reality, she took matters into her own hands. She packed up and headed back to Bethlehem. And I remember that morning as if it were yesterday. The three of us, Orpah, Naomi, and I, set out, with Naomi assuring us that she would be just fine on her own. but we didn't pay any attention to her. And then a short time later, she'd stop and insist again that we return home. In time, Orpah obeyed. But I couldn't. I couldn't because I knew that if she left, if she walked out of my life, the best of me would be gone with her. You know, at weddings, couples often use my words to Naomi as expressions of tender endearment. But that's not how I said them at the time. I was angry. And I said to her, "Entreat me not to leave you or to return from following after you." I was angry. "I will go where you go. I will lodge where you lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." Well, at last, I think she heard me, because she didn't say anything after that, and we walked in silence for a long, long time. Just so you know, Bethlehem was 50 miles away from Moab. Well, resettling in Bethlehem was not easy for Naomi, and it was not easy for me, primarily because we had no means by which to support ourselves. So what I did was to go out to the fields, and I asked permission to glean the barley that the harvesters had left behind. And that was a very common practice. That was a customary practice for poor people, the way poor people would eke a living. The person I asked said, "Okay." And so I started working. And then later that day, the owner of the property named Boaz came by, and he was curious as to who I was. And so he asked one of his servants about me. Well, that guy gave him the full scoop about how I'd left my homeland to accompany my mother-in-law, and he was admiring how hard I was working. And Boaz, what can I say? He just liked what he saw, and he liked what he heard. And so he came up to me, and he responded by welcoming me to his property. He said, "You don't have to go anywhere else." And then he offered me water, which was a nice gesture. And then later on, he went so far as to say in the future he would offer me lunch. He even, and I didn't learn about this until years later, but I found out that he even instructed his reapers to make sure they left me these big tufts of barley to pick up after them. And here all that time, I thought they were just being sloppy. Well, when I got home, I told Naomi about Boaz, and she was thrilled because, as it happened, Boaz was a relative of Elimelech's, which meant that he was supposed to look after his kinfolk. But things got complicated because over time, I realized I was falling in love with Boaz. And Naomi, God love her, she knew what was happening before I did. Yet romantically speaking, nothing happened, and I told that to Naomi. I said, "It's not happening." I mean, he was considerably older than I was, so maybe age entered into it. He didn't think it would be an appropriate union. Maybe it was because he thought I was still grieving my life as a widow. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I had no indication from him whatsoever that he was interested. So, finally, Naomi told me to do the unthinkable. She told me to wash my hair, put on perfume, wear my best dress, and, listen to this, find out where Boaz was spending the night. I'm serious. She told me to wait until after he'd had a full meal and a hefty goblet of wine, and then, after he'd fallen asleep, she told me to sneak in and lie down at his feet. That's a fact. Now, believe me, only Naomi could have made me do such a thing. No one else, truly. But because Naomi said to do it, I did it. I did exactly what she told me to do. I must have stopped breathing, I'm sure. I was so afraid. I went in, I lay down, all was perfectly still. I stopped breathing, and then he rolled over, and he accidentally kicked me. And then he awoke with a terrible start, and he said, "Who is this?" And I said, "I'm Ruth." Wait a minute, what am I doing? This is a church service. If you want to know what happened, read my book. Chapter 4, one chapter and a half left to go, and you will find out what happened. Yes, you can expect a happy ending. But suffice it to say that if a saint is someone who reflects God's love, then Naomi certainly qualified. And I truly hope that she finally came to believe that, yes, God is always in the business of plotting our joy. That I believe in the depth of my soul. Amen.